Thank you very much. I'm Valerie, a grateful recovered alcoholic. And I say I'm recovered because, like the first 100 men and women who had a hand in writing the big book, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. And boy, when they say hopeless, I really can relate to that. Just very brief background about me. Not that everybody's gonna relate, but maybe some of you will, just for the purposes of that. I come from a very long line of alcoholics. Both of my parents were alcoholic, and I have no brothers or sisters. And I have no children. So I just decided that the genes were best kept to myself for this lifetime. Anyway, I had my first drink when I was 3 years old. It was given to me by my family. And I remember the one, well, actually, my second drink. My first drink, I was very upset about. And I talked to my aunt about it, who started drinking every day about 9:30 in the morning and kept going until whenever she went to bed at night. And so but she was the oracle of the family and she knew everything. So I said to her, you know, I drank that champagne, and the last time I was here, and I felt funny. I felt kind of strange, you know. And she said, "Oh, honey, don't worry about that. You were just a little tipsy." And I said, "Tipsy?" And she said, "Yeah, you're just a little tipsy. Don't think a thing of it." So I went and I had my second glass of champagne. And that alcohol hit my system like a firecracker. And two things happened. I felt this incredible sense of invincibility. I felt like I could do anything. I felt like I could be anybody. I was unstoppable. And so I went to where the biggest crowd was, and I bent over at the waist and I spread my arms out like this, and I started spinning like a whirling dervish. And I said, "I think I'm a little tipsy." And everybody just burst out laughing. And that was the first time in my life that I felt loved and accepted. And I'll tell you the other thing that happened to me as the result of having that drink was I wanted more. I wanted more of that feeling. And to me, I got that feeling with alcohol. And I can tell you that I chased that feeling for 28 years before I finally had to give it up. There was, but my parents were extremely dysfunctional. It was a bizarre upbringing. There was no spirituality anywhere. The only time my parents ever used the word God or Jesus is when they were cursing. I wasn't even baptized until I was 13, and that was an afterthought. So I drank when I could as a kid. It wasn't very often, but I liked it and I always wanted more. When I got to be a teenager, my mother's alcoholism just took flight when I was about 15. And my parents had split up, but my mother wanted me to drink with her. And I did. I mean, she kept offering the stuff. And I just, of course, I accepted it because I was a drunk too. So I got out of school early, and I moved. I worked a job in DC, and lost it. And then I moved up to New York City, and I was 22. And I thought I was just gonna just knock everybody's socks off. You know, I had this incredible delusions that I was going to be heading up the programming for ABC Network. I mean, just crazy stuff, you know. And of course, with a few drinks, that ambition, you know, was really fueled. And so I lived in Manhattan for a couple of years, and then I moved to Forest Hills. And in Forest Hills, I was very isolated. I didn't know anybody. I know this is AA. I will just say that for at least a decade, I used pot and alcohol interchangeably. I couldn't do both at the same time because I turned into a vegetable, so I was non-functioning. So I would, you know, my drinking would start to get out of hand, and I say, "Well, I'm gonna just quit drinking for a while." So I would, but then I'd get stoned every day, and then the pot got out of hand, so I'd go back to drinking. But every time I did this, you know, the denial factor of this disease is just incredible, because every time I said, "Well, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop smoking." I felt like I had it under control, you know. So it was just this back and forth seesaw thing for a long time. And then it just got harder to find pot, and I couldn't find any in Queens, so I just said, "Okay, I'll stop pot," and I did. And then my drinking just shot through the roof. I had a very horrific, humiliating experience, during which I just embarrassed myself in front of. I was taking this night class to become a photographer. And we all went out drinking, the whole class, including the teacher, the assistants, everybody was in that bar. And I started drinking shots of Southern Comfort with water chasers, and I left the water alone. I just, you know, went for the Southern Comfort. I'd never had Southern Comfort before, but I was unfazed until after the fourth one. I thought it would be really cool to stand up because I happened to be sitting across the table from the instructor. And I stood up and bent over and got in his face. And I don't remember what I said, but it was pretty incendiary because he threw a drink in my face. And then I went to the restroom and people were cursing me, and I thought they should be cursing him. And then when I came out of the restroom, the bartender told me to get the hell out and not come back. Well, I mean, I was so, it was their fault. It was the class's fault. They should have backed me up, you know. And I was told when I came into the program, you know, blaming other people whenever I have one finger pointing at someone else, I've got three pointing back at me. But I didn't know that at the time, you know. I mean, I'm staggering out to get to the subway because I got to get, you know, home. And I thought, well, I'll solve this problem because it was obvious I could not drink in public the way I needed to drink. But I didn't know that I needed it. At that time, I still thought for sure I wanted it. And I did want it, but I needed it. So I decided I was going to solve this problem and I was not going to be humiliated ever again. I was going to stay home and drink alone. And by golly, that's what I did. And my blackouts, which I guess had started when I was in my teens, and if you think there's God, excuse me, once again. If you think, I forgot what I was going to say, but my drinking started to really get bad. My blackouts kept getting worse. And I didn't realize this, but for me, my blackouts got progressively worse. And by that, I mean I was blacked out for progressively longer and longer periods of time. Now, I know that my higher power has been watching out for me. Well, I believe since before I was born, but I know this because I was in Manhattan, and riding the subway alone, you know, in the early 1980s. And I would be riding that subway in a blackout. And the next thing I would remember is waking up in my own bed, but I couldn't tell you how I got there. And this happened, you know, before I decided that I was going to be smart about my drinking and drink alone. And that's what I did. Now, there's an old-fashioned definition for isolation, and it's a dark room where we develop our negatives. And I can tell you, I hit my bottom alone at my kitchen table with a magnum-sized bottle of Rhenini Red. And I had been in a blackout. I didn't realize this at the time. It took a while because This was back before, cell phones and cable TV and internet. And I went into a
5 minutes, my
blackout.
dear.
Okay. I went into a blackout on September 21st, 1985. And I came to, and I thought it was probably the next day because it was sunshine. And I was sitting in my apartment at my kitchen table, and there's like this much wine left in the bottle. And I'm like, wow, well, what happened? And I had to go up the hill to the big newsstand and look at the newspapers of the daily papers to see what date it was. And it was Saturday, October 5th of 1985. So I had been in a blackout for 15 days. I've spent a lot of time telling you about myself and my drinking. And I don't have much time left, certainly not enough to tell you about how fantastic life can become. I had no idea that I would be able to have the life I have today. I mean, I've done things and been places, and I've done it sober. If I could drink safely now, I wouldn't do it. I've got a spiritual way of life now that I value more than anything on this planet. And I am so incredibly grateful, I've had people, my higher power talks to me through people a lot of the time. And a lot of those people have come from AA, and they've saved my life literally more than once. And it has it all been, sunshine and rainbows. Life gets lifey, as they say, and things get better, and then they don't, and then they get better, and then they don't. I wake up every day with untreated alcoholism, and it's an ism. It's never alcoholism. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. That's what the big book tells me, and I know that it's true. And I can accept that today. And I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic because I found this way of life, these wonderful steps. I have a sponsor, she's got a sponsor, and I sponsor people. And it's just a beautiful life. And please don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. Get a sponsor and work the steps, and life will change. Your life will change. I can guarantee you, if you do that, you will not be the same person when you hit step 12 as you are if you're just taking step one now. I guarantee you. Please, and I guess I'll quit a few seconds early, which is this is something that's never happened to me before. But I'm grateful, and thank you very much, and especially to the newcomers. Keep coming, don't quit. It's so worth it.